It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. In our second half hour, later in the hour, we'll talk about the natural disaster a week ago in the Philippines. Thousands dead, hundreds of thousands left homeless, and we'll get the view of that disaster aftermath from some in Iowa's Filipino community. But first, this first half hour, we want to discuss a unique court in Iowa. It's been in place for just over a year, about a year and a half, I believe. The Johnson County Family Treatment Court is a specialty court that works with parents who suffer from substance abuse problems and whose children have been removed from their care by the Department of Human Services. Just a moment, we'll talk with a woman, an Iowan, a former meth addict who is the court's first graduate. But first, I want to welcome Rachel Antonuccio. She is an attorney in the Juvenile Division of the Iowa City Public Defender's Office, also a volunteer member with the Johnson County Family Treatment Court on that team. Rachel, welcome to our program.
Thank you so much, Ben, for having us.
Before we talk to a guest you've brought along, tell us about this court. What is it? How does it work?
Yeah, the Johnson County Family Treatment Court is kind of a volunteer court. People have just kind of come together deciding that this is maybe a good way to help reunite families, especially families with a parent struggling with substance abuse issues. There are other models for this court throughout Iowa that are federally funded, but we are not one of them. We're just a kind of a group of people who've decided to come together within the system and form our own system so that we can try to assist these families in a different way.
Mm-hmm. And how do you see this court fitting in to fill a need that is not otherwise met?
I think the problem with sort of the more mainstream court is really just one of resources and time. So a lot of these families need some pretty intensive resources and time put into their cases, and that's just not possible in every single case. There are just so many limited resources on every level in terms of the people who can work with the cases, in terms of financial resources. So this is a way to kind of put more into every family who comes into our court in hopes that the outcome will be more successful.
Rachel, joining you here in the Iowa City studio, Molly Lesnett is with us. Molly, welcome to our program.
Thank you.
Hi, you are an Iowa City resident, and you are the first graduate, I understand, of the Johnson County Family Treatment Court. Graduation in August. Congratulations on that.
Thank you.
Tell us, you came here today, and you're willing to share a painful struggle with addiction as a way to raise awareness about this court. How did your addiction start?
Well, I was addicted to meth for almost 10 years, and I tried to get treatment about 3 years ago in ASAC Heart of Iowa in Cedar Rapids. I did that, did the program, did amazing. Then I moved into their transitional home and started using again. And April of last year, on my 25th birthday, they took my son, and then I decided a month later to go to Mecca in Iowa City and got my stuff turned around and got involved in the family drug court. I wanted to do it in Linn County, but I wasn't a resident. I was a resident of Johnson County, so they wouldn't let me do the family drug court up there. So, you know, it was nice to know that I could. I was like, I'll do it first.
Right. It sounds to me like that was the turning point. Your son Brody being taken away from you. That was the down.
It was.
That was the turning point.
Yep.
Did that flip a switch? Change your mind as far as what you needed to do?
It did, because when I went to treatment the first time, I had him with me, and ASAC Heart of Iowa was an amazing treatment place, but and you can have your children, but I didn't know how to parent and be in recovery at the same time, and that was a struggle the whole time I was there. And then this time, Mecca, they allowed me to be by myself, and my son was in good, you know, with his family, and I was able to focus on myself and get myself better, because if you're in an airplane and it's going down, you and the mask come down and he's with me, I have to put the mask on myself, because if I'm not okay, he's not going to be okay.
We've heard a lot of news reports about meth addiction, the problem that it is here across the country and in Iowa, but we don't often get a chance to talk with someone who is so open about sharing a personal meth addiction story. So take us back a little bit before what you just described to how an addiction like that begins. How does a person slide into that?
Oh, God. Well, I'm from a small town and there wasn't much to do. And my son's father at the time was really bad into it. And it was just you had a lot of energy and it just gave you a lot of energy. And oh, it was just awful. My mom is a meth addict as well, so it kind of just runs in my family and in my blood, and I know all there is to know about meth. So.
And so when you're high on meth, you're feeling like what?
Euphoric. You feel full of energy. You can multitask.
Whatever task is before you, whether you go to work.
Yep.
I know there are some people who turn to it because they have multi-shift jobs in small towns.
Mm-hmm.
And you can clean the house. You can go to work. You can do all those things.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. What about all the news reports, and how do you react to as a meth addict when you hear this is not a path that's going to end well? Doesn't that register with you?
At the time when you're in active addiction, I don't think it registers that, like, oh, all these horrible things can happen. You can go to jail, you can go to prison, you can lose your teeth, you can lose your children. It's just when you're so caught up in addiction, you don't realize all of that stuff. And now stepping back, you see all that and you're like, oh my gosh, I'm surprised I'm not in prison and I'm surprised I'm not, dead. So.
Mm-hmm. Why exactly did the DHS, the Department of Human Services, take your son from you?
I have a wonderful family. And my son's father's mom is amazing. And she decided that, they knew I was doing meth again, and they decided to have his hair tested at the hospital here in Iowa City. And it came back positive for methamphetamines and amphetamines.
His hair tested?
Mm-hmm.
How does that show up?
The fact that I did it around him.
I see. Those particles get into his hair.
Yep, and in his system. And if I touched something or if it was on the counter and he touched it, it could get into his body. And so after they had his hair tested, they came and they said, were you on meth? And I said, yes, and I was very honest. And I thank God every day that my mother-in-law got my son's hair tested.
Were you thanking God or thankful to your mother-in-law at that point?
I am, and I'm thankful for DHS. But
at that point, immediately when...
No, I wanted to yes. Do bad things to her.
I can well imagine. So when that happened, let's talk more about this court, because that's really what the focus is here. Thank you, Molly, for sharing that painful part of your life, and that part is behind you. You haven't relapsed for how long?
I have been clean and sober for a year and a half.
Congratulations.
Thank
on
you.
That. Tell us, Rachel, about how the court works. So how did Molly get into the system, and what happened to her afterwards?
Yeah. So I actually became Molly's attorney after she had already been in the system for some time. So I was not there when she initially got into the system. But all our cases are made by referral. Often, for example, me as an attorney will identify a case that I think could benefit from this court. And the court's voluntary. So the parent who's participating in it has to agree to participate because it is really intensive. So basically, we have a lot more structure in place, both formally and informally, to kind of help these families navigate the system. So you're meeting with your team, which is, for example, your attorney, the assistant county attorney, drug treatment folks, the social worker, some family care providers, almost every other week. You're also meeting with the judge every other week, which is unusual in a lot of these cases that are on the typical court route. Mm-hmm. You'll see after your initial hearings, you'll see a judge maybe once every 6 months, once every 3 months.
In the case of the attorney, you served as a volunteer attorney in this case. But in the judge, what are the chief concerns? Relapse has to be one of them.
Yeah, relapse is a huge concern. But that's kind of almost secondary to understanding the root of the problem and trying to get to that. So relapse can be, you've just had a bad day and you relapse. But what fundamentally got you involved in the addiction situation that you're in, and how can we kind of address those core issues to make sure that that's not something that you're going to go back to?
Mm-hmm. And Molly Lesnett, when you look at your addiction problem, what was the answer that you arrived at when you were asked to find the core, the reason you turned to meth?
I think I was just really unhappy with my life and the choices I had made, and I was really angry. And it was used as a coping mechanism to cover up those feelings for so long. So
what are the range of core issues that you find, Rachel, when you work with others similar to Molly?
Yeah, I think there's a lot of things. I think all of the families involved with our court right now have dealt with issues of poverty. So that can be a fundamental issue when you don't always know where you're going to sleep at night, or if you're going to be able to feed yourself or your child. That creates a host of issues that have a lot of bad feelings, a lot of guilt, a lot of anxiety about that. So I think that is a part of it. There's also in, you know, not all cases and not particularly in Molly's case, some mental health issues. There can be lack of formal and informal support. So maybe your family is not around you or you really have no one to turn to. There are just a number of issues that can create a situation where it's really easy to fall deeply into addiction.
If you've just joined us, Rachel Antonuccio is with us, an attorney in the Juvenile Division of the Iowa City Public Defender's Office, but she volunteers, a volunteer member of something called the Johnson County Family Treatment Court. She's on that team and doing a lot of good as far as we can tell and as we're discussing. If you've just joined us, Molly Lesnett is with us as well. She's an Iowa City resident, the first graduate of that family treatment court, graduated in August, and a former meth addict. And so talk a little bit more about the process that happens in the court. Ideally, what is the path that you'll have someone before the court walk?
Yeah. So ideally, we'd identify the case really early. So as soon as the Department of Human Services got involved, as soon as I get a notice on my desk that there's a new case that I've been appointed to, we'd get involved from go. I've had cases before that I acquired midway through that I've realized could really benefit from the court, but at that point, it's kind of too late for the court to accept these cases. So first of all, early intervention.
Are there candidates who are not suitable for the court?
I've actually had a client be rejected from our request to be transferred to that court. And the issue being there, I acquired her case after her case had already been going on for, I believe, a year and a half. And at that point, the child had been out of the home for so long and the issues were so severe that the family treatment court decided not to accept that case. And that's just because, again, we're volunteer court. We have really limited resources.
Yes.
So we're trying to work with cases from the beginning.
Since your inception, how many cases have you dealt with?
We have dealt with six cases altogether. And Molly is our very first case, and she's also our very first graduate.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Continue on. You talked about what happens in the process.
Yeah. And so then it's really becoming integrated into the team. So making our clients feel comfortable with being very honest with us, being really a part of their weekly life. So it's not as if you're going to call me when a crisis comes up or I'm going to see you, you know, maybe 2 weeks before our hearing to get ready. We're seeing each other really consistently, really regularly, and not just me, but the whole team, the social workers, the providers, the judge. Mm-hmm. I mean, again, just a really intensive group of people.
You've said intense now several times.
Yeah.
in what way? And I want to ask Molly this too about the most intense moments, but what do you find in this volunteer court are the most intense issues you're dealing with?
I think the honesty piece is so huge because another important aspect of the court is that your other team members are often present. So other parents who are involved with the Department of Human Services are often involved in some of these conversations. So there's an ability for our participants to hold each other accountable in a way that maybe I, as the attorney, don't even know necessarily as much as Molly knows about another participant because she's been around those people or she knows people who know those people and have heard things. So a lot of that is the accountability and trust and the willingness to call people out when we think there's a concern.
Mm-hmm. Molly, in your case, how long did this court process last, the family treatment court in Johnson County, from beginning to end to your graduation in August? When did it start?
I was here.
It was about a year for me because I had gotten involved right when they started, and my case had already been open for a few months prior. So,
Take me back to a moment, an intense moment, since we're using that word, an intense moment when you had to really perhaps change your thinking when you were challenged by someone involved in the court.
I mean, I guess the honesty thing, I was completely honest from start to finish. Every time we met, it was just if I was struggling with something, I was just completely honest and open about it. So, I mean, I had intense moments, but not like relapse or anything like that. But more specifically, like I was having issues with daycare and a vehicle for a long time. And just being open and honest about that I needed help, you know, was kind of hard for me. That was really intense for me.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Were there many moments when you thought this is going to end the same way? I'm going to relapse. This is not it.
Not once.
Okay. What about that program then gave you that sense, that feeling that you would finally succeed after off and on being a meth addict for 10 years?
I think from the beginning, something clicked in my head, and just the accountability and the structure and the honesty was all a huge, big piece of it. So,
You have a 5-year-old boy. Is he back with you now after being taken away by the DHS?
Yes, he was out of my care for 9 months, and he got placed back in my care in January of this year.
What was that moment like when he returned to your house?
Oh, it was amazing. Because he's never been out of my care except for those 9 months. Even while I was using, he was still in my care. So to have him return to me was just satisfactory or something. I mean, it was just amazing. Mm-hmm. It was a great feeling.
When he was taken away from you because your mother-in-law contacted the DHS mm-hmm. to tell her that you'd been doing meth again, I'm assuming there is in this, there is your addiction, that damage to one person of that addiction over years. But there's so much family ties to be repaired here. Mm-hmm. Was that a big challenge for you?
Yes, and it still is. I have trouble. I have family that has been in my life my whole life and still to this day won't talk to me, even the fact that I have been changing and have been growing it forward and not using. So that's a huge challenge. But the people that matter the most to me do talk to me. And, you know, I have two wonderful sisters who are amazing. And
mm-hmm. and Molly rebuilt those relationships. I mean, you could see throughout the course of mm-hmm. the case, her rebuilding her family relationships, which was also a really neat part of that process, to watch her become close to people she'd maybe been estranged from for some time. Mm-hmm.
Getting closer to people who had become estranged because of your behavior, because of your choices as an addict here. What about the people in that former group who are perhaps in rehab now or perhaps still users? Do you find it – do you have to distance yourself from them?
Oh, yeah. I mean, because I'm from here. So the fact that I'm from this area, I know a lot of people still actively using. And I just – I changed my number. My Facebook is very limited. You know, just everything possible. I mean, I know what my triggers are and what my relapses are to stay away from those people. And
simply contact with those people
yes.
is a trigger.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. What do they think of you? Have they ever been supportive of you?
Oh, yeah. It's crazy. I mean, active addicts are extremely supportive, you know, and because I'm doing something that they can't do right at the time. And, you know, they're proud of me. I have a lot of friends that are proud of me that still are using and, you know, which is weird.
Mm-hmm. And a lot of the team members are really proud of Molly, which is really neat to see. The participants are really inspired by her. I mean, she's been so successful. We always say it's sort of a blessing and a curse that she's our first graduate because she was so successful. She did. Yeah.
Right.
She was so successful. But that's also really inspiring to our other participants who can see how well you can do if you really work with us.
This is the Johnson County Family Treatment Court. But for those listening all across Iowa and in the two border states, this is not unique to Johnson County. How would you recommend people find out more information to see if something is available in their area along these lines, if they have they themselves or a family member has a substance abuse problem and thinks this may be a path.
Absolutely. I would say contacting the local clerk of court is a good idea. The clerk of court should be able to have a sense of if there's a family treatment court program within that court system. There's also some resources online. You know, certain counties in Iowa have established family treatment courts through a federal grant. So some of those programs are well established. Like I said, we're just a volunteer court, so we're not one of them as much. But certainly reaching out to the Department of Human Services could also be helpful. And just really trying to get in touch with the court system and see what your options are.
Rachel, you are a volunteer member of this. You are work in the Juvenile Division of the Iowa City Public Defender's Office, but you do this work as a volunteer. What motivates you?
Well, I think what motivates me is what motivates the whole team, and I think we all fundamentally have a belief in people, A, that people want to do better, and B, that people can do better. And I think that we also all believe that our community is really strengthened when we're addressing these issues from the beginning. We don't want these families. We see families that have a case successfully closed and come right back a few months later. That's not what we want to see. We really want to see our families succeed long term. And I think all of us are really committed to that. And that's why it's not hard for us to put in extra hours every week. I mean, to see a success like Molly, that can keep you going for a long time.
Mm-hmm. And I have to believe after a year of going through this until graduation, Molly and Rachel, this is a relationship that will last for years into the future.
Yeah, I mean, I truly hope so, and I believe that it will. And I think it's not just, you know, often attorney clients can remain close, but I think Molly will be close with all of the members of the team, the assistant county attorney. She'll be close with that person, someone mm-hmm. who my clients typically would not become close to.
Is this type of volunteer organization sustainable? Is that the way we should be doing things, even though it is obviously meeting a lot of success? Shouldn't this be sort of thing be funded if it's so effective?
Yes, it should be. And we would really like to see that. I mean, and this is the problem why we have so few cases is we really can't sustain more than that. So for us,
there's a bigger caseload if you would have more resources.
Absolutely. And we could take cases. Exactly.
Exactly.
Yeah. And we could experiment with cases that are already a year and a half in and see if we could take those cases in too.
Molly, how do you know there's such a need out there?
Because I am one of the cases, and I have several friends and people that could benefit from this, and it would be really helpful. There's a need.
Molly Lesnett, you have been clean, sober for how long again?
A year and a half.
A year and a half. Do you ever think what might have happened had there not been this court and Mecca, that sort of intervention, where your life would be right now?
I'd probably be dead. But yeah, I think about that a lot. Uh-huh. And it worries me. I mean, I thank God every day. I love my attorney. I loved the court system. I love DHS. I mean, normal people wouldn't say that. Normal people are like, I'm terrified of them, but I'm so grateful.
Mm-hmm. Well, I want to thank you very much for coming here today, sharing a very painful chapter in your life that's behind you. Mm-hmm. We have a very hopeful future that we can look forward to for Molly and hopefully for this court, Rachel.
Thank you, Ben. I appreciate it.
How do people find out more about it before we say goodbye?
Yeah, well, certainly anyone would be welcome to contact me. Again, the Department of Human Services, social worker named Haley Messer is kind of our primary social worker. She's very linked into that. But yeah, we're happy to talk about this court and anyone who wants to get involved. We have a need for more people who are willing to help us do this work. So certainly contacting me was an option.
Okay. Rachel Antonucci is an attorney in the Juvenile Division of the Iowa City Public Defender's Office and a volunteer member of the Johnson County Family Treatment Court. Molly Lesnett, the first graduate of that court. Congratulations again to you, Molly.
Thank you.
Thank you for coming in and sharing your story.
Thank you for having me.
Coming up in just a moment, we'll talk about the aftermath of the natural disaster that struck the Philippines a week ago. Thousands are dead, hundreds of thousands left homeless. We'll get a view of the disaster aftermath from Iowa's Filipino community. We'll talk with Dr. Rosa Reyes of the Filipino-American Association of Iowa. Stick around for that conversation. Perhaps you would like to join us, especially if you're a Filipino-American. 1-866-780-9100. This is River to River from Iowa Public Radio News.